Thank you. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
There's no business like show business.
Oh, and away we go.
Hello again, and welcome to the Green Room.
Have a seat.
If it's your first time here, get ready to have some conversation about the art and business of community theater, which coincidentally is actually the name of this podcast, while waiting for your call. We're the groupies, and we get some of our best ideas here and share information you can use to make your community theater group the best it can be. Sometimes we slip into other topics, but you understand how green room conversations go. I'm David War, the ringmaster of our little band, and looking around the green room today, I see...
Kathleen McBee.
Robert Gilman.
Carol Slepka.
Brian Burchett-Ross. You didn't point
to
me.
I did point.
Mm-hmm. I take direction well. Brian Burchett-Ross.
Thank you. And I think it's going to be a fun show because apparently we're all kind of wound up here, hyped up on caffeine as we're doing the recording. And we've titled this show Love, Valor, Compassion Coordinator, which is because it's almost Valentine's Day. By the time this drops, I think it'll be the Monday before Valentine's Day. So we thought, what a better time to talk about love and intimacy on stage.
Yeah.
But that's the tease, because we have other things to get to before we get to that. And
you're such a tease.
Which is appropriate for Valentine's Day, I suppose. Maybe not. Just a couple quick announcements. Just a reminder that the American Association of Community Theater still has their Community Theater Management Conference registration, which I just saw another notice of that registration is open, so you may want to go ahead and check that out. I have an upcoming trip to Utah, which will be at the end of the week after this has dropped. I'm going to be traveling with my good friend Betsy Willis, who also happens to be an adjudicator extraordinaire.
Hi, Betsy.
And she is a development officer and has been for years for the Old Town Playhouse up in Traverse City. She doesn't do that now, but she worked for them quite a while. So they were like the third largest community theater in the state. So she's actually come to Monroe Community Players to do some work with us in board development and such as well. So a wealth of knowledge and information. So I'm hoping to get a couple interviews with her while we're together. We don't see each other as much as we'd like because we live on opposite sides of the state. She's up in Traverse City. I'm down in Monroe. She's one end of the mitten. We're at the other.
Mm-hmm.
But and she's got a lot of snow, and oddly enough, right now we got a lot of snow too. So,
but I like it.
Just the right amount.
I'm okay with it.
I mean, winter is getting worse and worse. I agree. Yeah. But the difference is nice between a winter that we've had the last few years where it's just been nasty, muddy dead grass. Yeah.
Yes.
And now we've got white pretty bright snow. And it's like, okay, if we're going to have winter, let's have the snow. Yeah.
Yes. And I am 100% with you.
Now, if they would just plow my streets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and appropriately.
You're asking a lot, Carol.
I know.
One of the shows I'll be seeing out there is Frozen out in Utah. So we'll see how that works. Supposedly it's going to be like in the 50s. I got to double check the weather.
You know that question you asked about shows that you're over?
Frozen?
Got one.
Have you ever seen it?
I saw the movie.
Well,
I've seen clips.
That doesn't count.
We did a whole episode on why you have to see the play and not the movie.
You can't say you're over it.
I've seen clips on YouTube, and it just looks like another one of those let's make the kids happy crap.
You know, the thing that, and I'll save maybe this for later, but I'll say it anyway. You can cut it. My favorite thing about that is when they do the dress transformation.
Yes.
Okay, I was going to say,
yank that right off and boom.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have seen that.
I don't know how many videos of how they do that. It's so cool.
Yeah.
Something I noticed on the tickets for this show that we'll be seeing is, because you think there'd be a lot of kids there, right? They say right on it specifically, no children under 5 allowed except for specific performances, which are for 3-plus-year-olds.
That's good.
Yeah. So they actually limit the younger kids to specific performances.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice.
Why?
Because crowd control, I would think.
Yeah.
just for the enjoyment of everybody else.
Of people that would like to see it and don't want the distraction of children that are going to have a hard time sitting through the whole show.
So you're saying it's not the show itself, it's the performance...
They're probably doing.
I'm guessing, like Kathleen said, they're probably doing it for adults that don't want to sit there trying to watch a show while kids run up and down the.
Yeah, because I'm just thinking, what in Frozen would they not be?
But now that's a Frozen I'd be interested in.
No, I'm sure it's really about 3-year-old it could be, you know,
right.
The Lion King they're
but
watching.
Nothing
they're,
about
they're not going
the show.
To be maintaining everything.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it's all about
and
the
if
audience.
If somebody's bringing a 3-year-old, maybe they're bringing a 1-year-old.
But that was the first time I've noticed that, where it's like basically, hey, if your kid is under this age, you can't bring them. Mm-hmm. And then here's the specifics of when you can. So I just thought that was interesting.
And I just want to say, because now all of a sudden I feel like the people out there listening are like, well, so that guy doesn't like kids. I love kids. I absolutely do. I don't, children's theater, all the theater that all belongs in our world. Don't get me wrong. I do love children. So that's not it. All right.
Okay.
Usually I like them with a little barbecue sauce.
I knew he was going to do that.
I
knew he was going to go do that. I knew it.
I'm done.
But anyway, so
back on track.
That's
Dave.
My upcoming adventures.
back on track.
I think too. I understood there's rumors that Broadway Brian may be going out with his husband Diva David. you said it.
Yeah.
Off to New York City again, so we can look for some more Broadway reviews.
Not until June, but
coming up.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe.
And speaking of which, though, we do have later in this episode Carol's review of Shucked.
Yes.
Yep. Which is our third, but maybe not final review of Shucked.
I was going to say it's the most reviewed show we've done, I think.
Well, and I don't know what Carol's going to say, but the more I keep thinking about the show, the more it's like, I wish they'd release that to community theater today.
Thank you. I want to direct that so bad.
It's almost the perfect community theater show.
It agrees.
Even if it is just the Music Man updated.
Oh, but it's still perfect. Mm.
Yeah. All right, Bob.
But
we're the only ones that haven't seen it. Unless somebody else is out there.
But you also all remember, I hope, that we have a play reading challenge for everybody,
mm-hmm.
Which actually made me, and that's why I forgot to bring my pile of plays that I have not read. I actually pulled out my pile because I've got like all the ones I bought back at the National Act Fest. And so I've got like 5 or 6 plays that I need to read myself, including a couple more by Lauren Gunderson, who wrote Silent Sky, which I happen to be directing right now, and Carol and Kathleen are both in. She's having quite a moment as a playwright, and I really think it's well-deserved. So if you have not read a play by Lauren Gunderson, you need to. She's pretty good. I don't think she's ever actually been on Broadway either, which kind of goes back to the idea that, you know, you don't have to be a Broadway playwright to be a successful playwright.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why we're looking for new shows. There's a lot of good stuff out there that just never makes it to Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when we consider that Broadway, we think mostly about the musicals and stuff. I know there's still some straight plays on Broadway, but mm-hmm. by far it's for the tourists and the musicals, I think.
Yeah, it is.
But anyway, so Patricia Middleton, our groupie extraordinaire out in Kansas.
Hi, Patricia.
How are you doing? She read a play and sent us her review of it, and this one I think you might find interesting. It's called The Norwegians.
Oh.
I've heard of it, I believe. It's by C. Denby Swanson. It was published in 2013. Mm. She says it's a dark comedy about the northern Midwest, Norwegian culture, hitmen, and breakups. This show has 4 characters, 2 men and 2 women, but a very simple set, tech, costume, and props. It could easily be done by community theater as long as your audience doesn't mind adult language. And I think we've been proving lately, at least in our group, and I'm sure a lot of groups I've gone to, adult language is not the barrier it used to be.
No.
I mean, I remember one time someone would edit swear words out of scripts.
Oh, yes.
And mm-hmm. it's like, you can't do that. Well, I'm going to, because our audience won't stand for it. And now it's like nobody even bats an eye.
I personally think they would have stood for it back then, too.
That was my comments, not Patricia's. Mm-hmm. she said, beside the 4 characters having lots to memorize, the only other challenge would be moving them quickly from scene to scene with some costume change happening in a few seconds. She thinks this would be a fun as a stage reading or radio play. The dialogue gives actors a lot to work with, both comedically and emotionally. It would take a director with experience keeping up the pacing and the story flowing without turning every other line into a pause for a laugh. She gives it 4 out of 5 stars.
Oh.
So thank you for that review, Patricia.
Let's check that out.
I think we'll have to check out The Norwegians. So add that to your list, folks, if you're still looking for plays to read. Remember, the goal was pretty simple, just 1 new play a month.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so I think we can keep up with it. And let us know what you read and what you think of it, and we will share it here on the air. And let's see if we can get some playwrights and new plays out there and moving forward.
Does anybody, have you guys read anything new?
I'm in the middle of a one act, and I just really disliked it, and I gave up. It was like, I don't even want to get into it right now. Maybe eventually I'll pick it back up and read it, but I didn't care for it.
No. You didn't? Okay.
And I can't even remember the title. It was part of the script that I had with Black Comedy. Mm-hmm. Mm. And but it took off. It just wasn't great. Weird soliloquies. It's like we're going to spend four pages for a woman to describe her life to the audience by talking to her dead father, and it got boring, and I was just like, eh. I just...
Well, and I've got in my pile, I've got The Revolutionists by Lauren Gund, Four Old Broads by Leslie Kimball, Hope Wooten Jones, Jones Hope Wooten playwrights, but I got a couple of their comedies to read. We have just recently added to my list Julius Caesar. And by the way, someone is doing Julius Caesar in the area. I almost think it's the Players Guild of Dearborn.
Now or next year?
Soon.
Okay, that's fine.
So that's an aside for us as we're looking at hint things that may be coming to community theater local to us.
But they wouldn't be doing it our way.
I would hope not.
Yeah, me too.
Well, I'm reading The Yellow Wallpaper, mm-hmm. which I love the story. I think I've heard of that one. And the problem I'm having is I get so hung up on how I would stage it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's like, happen. Okay, how would I do this? How would I do that? How, you know, where would I find all these people? And when they give stage directions, I'm trying to picture it in my head. So it's taking me a really long time to get through it because I just keep going back. But it's, I mean, I love the story. I have for years. It's originally by... Charlotte Gilman. Charlotte Perkins Gilman is the original author of the story. Okay. And, I'm enjoying it. But I'm hung up on the stage.
Well, I think that's a hang up for anybody in theater.
Yeah.
When you see a show or read a show, your filter is a little different than someone that can just go and enjoy a show.
Oh, right? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, when I went and saw The Roommate with Mia Farrow and Patti LuPone, I mean, I was watching it, and one side of my brain was enjoying the performances, but the other side was like, now if I did this, you know, in our theater, how would I do this?
Or I wouldn't do that way,
Or, So there's always the two sides that are battling each other out.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Back to you, Dave.
Okay, thanks. I was still looking at Julius Caesar.
Oh, okay.
So, no, I'm just looking at what Dearborn Actors Guild has coming up, and they've got Next to Normal and Hairspray, but I did not see Julius Caesar.
Yeah, it's someone, because it came through our Instagram feed for the podcast, so it's someone local. Because I really like their logo, too. So we'll figure that out before long, and maybe for the next episode we can reveal who it is.
You know, one thing that I think intimidates people about going to Shakespeare is getting lost.
Yeah.
You know, not being able to follow the language or getting lost in the story. And I saw Taming the Shrew, where in between each one, these two characters came out and kind of bantered and discussed and kind of made sure the audience was on track with what happened in just a short little thing. And I'm not a big Shakespeare person, but I could see maybe having something like that might make Shakespeare less intimidating for people to come see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
when I was teaching middle school, we did a show called The Taming of LaRue, which was obviously a takeoff on Taming of the Shrew. And it was a Western. And I mean, it was for middle grades. Mm-hmm. And I played the part. There were two town gossips. And I was one of them. And that's what we did.
Oh.
Was we kind of, we started the show by walking through the audience and talking about what was going on. Oh, no, it wasn't the Taming of LaRue. Was it the Taming of LaRue? Or the Sheriff of, no, Taming. Anyway, sorry. Anyway, so the town gossips then would.
Oh, that's cute.
So that was a cute way of doing it.
I did find the Julius Caesar. And actually, it's showing right now, excuse me, at Wayne State.
Oh, what did you
say? So I was off by a few miles. Mm-hmm. Bob, do you have a question?
One thing I saw on the list, there was Hanna-Barbera Hamlet.
Hanna-Barbera Hamlet? Hmm. Okay.
No, oh, interesting.
That's
okay. Bugs Bunny?
No, Hanna-Barbera would be Yogi
that's
Bear.
Looney Tunes. That's Warner Brothers.
Oh, sorry.
This would be Yogi Bear, Huckleberry Hound.
I just got jumped on by
you need to listen to the pop culture of people. Yeah.
Scooby-Doo.
It's okay. I didn't know.
Yeah.
Hey, so leading into our actual discussion for today, there's that tangent verse we talked about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What are some people's favorite romantic plays or scenes with or plays with romantic scenes in them?
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of like getting to know you. Do you have a favorite play?
Do you want me to play that before we do that?
Mm-hmm. No. Mm-hmm.
No, okay.
By the way, congratulations on a wonderful T-shirt again, Brian.
Mm, oh, thank Batman. You. Thank you very much. Got it for Christmas.
He's wearing a Batman T-shirt. For those who aren't following along on YouTube, but which is unfortunately
1960s
everybody.
1960s Batman.
So. Anyone?
Anyway,
go ahead, Brian.
I don't romance. Romance
to a degree. Every play has some romance in it.
Mm-hmm.
But aren't there are some that I was thinking, what plays are good love stories? I mean,
ones
that we keep mentioning are things like Cemetery Club that we just did.
I got some. I love romantic plays.
I have one.
So one that I really enjoyed, fortunately Dave and I were part of, was One Slight Hitch.
Yes.
Yes.
That's a good one. By Lewis Black.
Yeah. Yeah, and that played on a Valentine's Day weekend. One weekend. We sold out all the performances in February, and that was just a very fun show set in the 80s.
Comedy.
Yes, a comedy of... the daughter's getting married, and the ex-boyfriend shows up, and it had great characters, and really enjoyed that show.
It's kind of that classic motifs.
It went one room set, so if you're looking for something, it was a lot of fun that came to mind. Also, when it comes to musicals, and I've never seen it, but I've listened to the music over and over again, and I would just want to see the show, can't find it anywhere, is Bridges Over Madison County.
Hmm.
The music is just incredible. I read the book, and I loved the story, and then when I saw that there was actually a show, I just kind of investigated it, came across the soundtrack, and just... fell in love with the music and the backstory of the composer. And so if you've never checked it out, maybe if more people were interested in it, we might see it more, but I just, one that I would really love to see.
The Bridges Over Madison County. Okay.
Yep, yep.
Is it over or is it just of?
Oh, is it Bridges? Bridges of. It's Bridges of.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's Bridges
that's,
of.
I thought that's why I was making a distinction on the over, because it was different than the title of the book.
Yeah,
and
Bridges of.
So Bridges it's Bridges of Madison County.
It is Bridges of Madison County.
Yeah, it's probably the official adaptation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Any others? And again, most musicals, frankly, have a love story at the heart of them.
Yeah, I was going to say. The only thing I can think of is Hello, Dolly.
Mm.
Which is about matchmakers.
Yeah.
And then, in a perverted sort of way, the first one that came to mind was A Rose for Emily, which...
Okay.
Okay, do you know that?
No.
You know that story?
No.
Okay. Another one that I would like to direct if I could figure it out. It's about this... Oh God, how can I explain it with... Okay. There is... the wealthiest woman in town is very much a recluse... And she dies, and they find out that she has had. Okay, you won't understand why it's a romance if I don't tell you the punchline, but I don't want to tell you the punchline.
Well,
okay. It's.
It is a quandary.
It is a quandary. So she fell in love with this guy when she was younger, and he skipped town. And so she's been pining for him her whole life.
Mm-hmm. Like Delta Dawn.
Okay, I don't know that one. So.
You don't know that song?
You don't know that song?
Oh, the song.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I knew. That's a reference I got right away.
Thank you.
Well, I know it's Helen Reddy, but I don't know. I can't. I mean, I can hear the Dale Dud, but I don't know the rest of the
song. What's that flower you got on?
Okay.
Could it be a...
Don't buy? Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
Well, so, I digress.
That was a...
I was hoping to get
a joke that kind of fell flat because I don't want to tell you that.
I was hoping to get a few more things out with thinking of Valentine's Day and everything coming up, but that's okay.
I have.
Oh, you do?
I do actually.
You have more?
I didn't say any.
Just being polite and letting me go first.
You guys.
Well, then go ahead, Brian. First of all, unlike
Kathleen, loves the love story. Yeah, I'm the romantic. To me, it's not a good romance unless one of them dies.
Oh.
I detest happy endings. That's why I love West Side Story. That's why I love Camelot. That's why I love anything where it all ends in disaster.
Love Story. Steel Magnolias.
Love Story. That's kind of a love story, I guess, between a mother and daughter. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I did. There are a couple that I truly, truly like. One is one that I was in many, many years ago called Fifth of July. Mm-hmm. And the romance in that is between a gay Vietnam vet who loses his legs in the war and his partner in a Missouri home. It's by Lanford Wilson. It's part of a trilogy. It's the final part of a trilogy. And I love it because it showed the relationship, among other storylines, it showed the relationship of trying to rebuild these two guys into a loving relationship again after the one has come back from Vietnam. Mm-hmm. So it's a very intense show, and it's one of my favorite parts I've ever done. The other one that I truly love, and talk about easy to stage, is Love Letters. Mm-hmm. I do like that story of Love Letters. But again, in the end, it's not a happy ending. Right. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a very, very beautiful play.
Yeah, and for those that don't know, when you look up Love Letters, it's done in Reader's Theater style, mm-hmm. and it's literally two people on stage reading. But it is amazingly captivating.
Mm-hmm. It really is.
I mean, you would think, oh, I'm just going to listen to two people read their love letters, but it's a very captivating story.
Yeah, because it doesn't just the way it's written, you just get little bits and segments of what really is happening and how the characters are progressing, and then until at the end, and then it's like, oh, that just is horrible.
Matt, you probably do it with the two person. Obviously, you do it with a two person show.
Mm, oh yeah, yeah.
But the ending really is completely not
is.
What you think it is.
Right, and if anybody out there is thinking of doing Love Letters, it's a show where you can actually, even though there's two people, you can have more than two people cast if you're doing, like we did four shows, and we had a different couple every night. So more than two people got to play in the show. So so those are my two, other than West Side Story, because I love West Side Story, because, he dies. And I'll tell you, another one has a romance in it that is part of it, is Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That to me is a beautiful love story, which, not the movie, read the play or the musical, does not end happily either. So, and I love that. I just love that.
And I love too, Brian, when you staged Love Letters and we did it with four separate sets of actors. One, because it allowed each of the group of actors to really bring everything to the one performance they got to do.
Mm-hmm.
And since they didn't have to memorize that really, and when you have such a small cast like that, opening up, because what are the two reasons you go to see a show? One, you're interested in the story. Two, you know somebody on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Two people wouldn't been able to draw a whole weekend.
Right.
So to open it up, give more opportunity for people, it was one that they didn't have to memorize. We had a great group of people come out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what made it so hard. We couldn't pick just two because we had so many. And the dynamics of each one, seeing it four times with four different people and just picking up little things differently from each time was wonderful.
Yeah, I agree.
So Brian, I'm going back a little bit to his comment on liking the sad endings, that means you really should like that play that we have much maligned in this podcast, which is Lovers, the 1967 two-part play by Irish playwright Brian Friel, Winners and Losers, of which I have been known to run out of a theater screaming when it comes on.
Well, you scared me away when it shows up.
I think I kept referring to it as Lovers Part 2, but it's really Winners. It's called Winners and Losers, and the first part is actually called Winners.
We are not exaggerating.
Make that clarification for anyone, but they aren't. They, I, without giving away too much, but I guess it is, they, it's a very weird definition of winners in my book. So
yeah,
but it's oh dear.
And another shout out for Lovers Part
we
Two.
We got to throw that out onto our season and see if everyone thinks I'm right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, faith in me, Gory.
Both people who show up to watch it.
I think I'll be okay not seeing that.
Yeah. So and the reason, though, I was bringing up this whole idea of favorite romantic things is because then it occurs to me a lot of these love stories we've been talking about, there aren't a lot of intimate scenes on the stage, though, so maybe it doesn't quite flow as well. Am I in the way?
No, you're fine. You're okay.
We wanted to talk about intimacy on the stage in general and the problems with that. And frankly, something I had seen on maybe a Facebook post somewhere was, you know, should community theaters start hiring intimacy coordinators? This, of course, is something that's done in Hollywood and, frankly, Broadway probably, to Hollywood film and TV for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get down to it, film and TV have a lot more nude scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or nearly nude scenes than we do.
Or scene cuts.
But I've
they
had,
can do.
In my directing life, I've had an experience, however, where I've had an actor basically, you know, as I say, okay, and then this is the point where you have to go in and hold her and let's do the kiss. And it's like, oh, I don't like people touching me. Mm. And it's like, oh.
Nice
that was not on your audition form.
but it's kind of like, oh, this is something now we have to work with and deal with because it's you know, you have to accept people's boundaries and mm-hmm. either help them get past it in a way that's safe and make them feel safe about it. And frankly, it's not necessarily a skill that most of us in community theater directing would have. Now, in this case, we were able to work through things, came up with some creative ways to, with the blocking and such, so that the kissing scenes and everything came off. But yeah, it's difficult when the scripture says they kiss.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, I'm not even going to touch her, let alone kiss her.
Yeah.
Touch her? I don't even know her.
Yeah. which is saying, because when I was young and coming up in community theater, it was just like, do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You just do it. Yes. However, I will also admit, and I think this is probably important too, that was an age before a lot of the diseases that we have today, including HIV/AIDS, including
COVID
including understanding how flu transmits and all this.
Yeah.
These are things that we just weren't that cognizant of. Kissing was okay.
Let me just counter one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah. You cannot get
AIDS through kissing.
Kissing.
Right. Yeah.
So that, but there was a hysteria.
At that time,
there was a hysteria. So yeah. I get that. And everybody gets the flu. And I get COVID 5 or 6 times a year. So.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, you're the expert.
I am the expert on that one.
But yes, and it's, I'm willing to take that correction, but
you're
I was
right.
thinking in the terms of the times.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
There was a period in theater and everywhere else where everyone was afraid that everybody was going to get AIDS.
Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Just by being in the same room with other people.
Mm-hmm. Bird flu.
Another one everyone was terrified.
Yeah. Bird flu.
So,
well, the question is, though, so let's say as community theater, you're putting on a show where you think, okay, I need to hire someone. Is there such a thing? I mean, for community theater, can you find an intimacy coach?
I think that would be the difficulty.
Yeah.
Is there because money involved?
A true intimacy coach is a professional.
Right.
Who's probably, frankly, you know, should have at least I'm not sure what degrees, but you know, some therapy kind of degrees, counseling degrees. Here's what I found that they all, but they can make $60,000 to $90,000. So many inappropriate compliments.
So many inappropriate comments going through my head right now.
But
sorry,
you know,
this is why
just doing that quick Google search. You know, it was they should be making $60,000 to $90,000 a year.
Wow.
So when you start saying, okay, so now if you're hiring somebody on a basis, how much does that cost? But according to the ever popular AI in the Google search, I really should move to Bing, but I think they have AI too now. And
Bing died years ago.
No, it's still out there.
I'm sure there'll be like
cherries.
If you don't want your searches tracked by the government, use Bing.
Mm. Yeah, right.
An intimacy coordinator ensures actor safety by establishing clear consent, choreographing intimate scenes like a dance for physical and emotional boundaries, just choreography, mediating communication between actors and directors. So when the director's saying do it and the actors are saying no, they act as a mediator, and providing advocacy and resources for actors' physical and psychological well-being throughout the entire production process. They create a structured environment where actors can express boundaries, use modesty garments, and feel empowered to stop or adjust scenes without pressure, preventing exploitation and ensuring comfort. I don't know of a lot of plays where we're going to be putting people into that serious of a situation. Mm-hmm. There may be a scene with a couple in bed, but generally when we do it, they're in pajamas or at least a t-shirt. You know, everyone seems to be kind of clothed. Now, there may be groups out there that, okay, get naked and get under the covers, but I kind of doubt that. So they said there are some key methods for ensuring safety before the production even goes up. Get the consent. Mm-hmm. Say, hey, guys, this audition, you need to know this is what your character will have to do. And then, you know, right there in the audition process, well, I'm not going to do that. Thank you for your time. Discuss, which sounds harsh, discuss the details with directors and writers, understand the scope of the intimacy, meet with the actors to get explicit informed consent for any nudity and physical contact. So that's something for love, compassion, and valor, or love, valor, and compassion, and language. Choreography, you know, choreograph those intimate scenes, which is essentially what we did in my situation. Kisses or simulated sex, physical touch. And I think in the musical comedy Murders of 1940, you had a simulated sex act.
Highly.
Right on stage, fully clothed, but there it was.
There it was, now, of course, for comedic purposes, but it was still there.
The two actors had to be acting in a very intimate way without being intimate. You know, specify, go out to the specificity of specifying where body parts, placements, and movements. And, of course, using modesty garments, barriers, and prosthetics to ensure comfort and coverage, which is probably a little further than any play we would do. and we found Carol's a new trigger for Carol.
I'm 12. I'm a 12-year-old boy right now.
But
does somebody need a prosthetic?
Communication.
There was a play.
Was there?
Oh, did I never tell you my story of exit laughing?
I don't think so.
I'll tell you off air.
And we want to say goodbye to everybody in the green room.
I say, no, stay. If it's like that, so we may have to cut that otherwise, as we're just teasing our audience.
Yeah. All right.
All those groupies out there, you'll have to DM for Carol's story.
Contact Carol for that story.
But communication and advocacy act as the liaison between the actors, directors, other crew, costumes. You know, probably being critical here. Provide actors with a safe vocabulary to articulate boundaries and needs.
Safe word.
Intervene if actors feel pressured or unsafe, ensuring they can pause or withdraw from a scene. Check in with the performers to support their emotional well-being, especially with the vulnerable material, offering protocols to help actors decompress, and, of course, just training and expertise, possess training and consent, anti-harassment, trauma stewardship, and conflict resolution. So they follow what they call pillars: context, communication, consent, choreography, and closure, 5 C's, to guide their work. And the structured approach makes intimate scenes feel less risky, more authentic, to help things on stage and in the film and movies. But like I say, for us, then I guess the real problem is I can sit here and say, well, gosh, we're not going to do a play that needs all that. I could be totally wrong because the actor will disagree with me. And they'll say, I need the support to get through this kind of thing. You know, what may seem as simple to me as a kiss can become a much bigger thing.
Well, and I think it depends a lot on your experience. So when we were doing Grease, we had the situation where Rizzo and, who's the main?
Kanicki.
Thank you very much. He was 22. She was in high school. And yes, and so very talented, mm-hmm. but in very different headspaces,
mm-hmm.
very different experience, mm-hmm. and experience in theater. And so he was playing the part as he saw that they just have one little kiss. They're in the park, I think. They're hanging on each other or something. And he's doing what he feels the character would be doing, and she is completely uncomfortable.
Sure.
You know, I could see and that. Yeah.
Same yeah. thing in Bedford with men going, no, I'm not going to touch her. I'm married.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. And we didn't even get into their moral points.
Yeah.
Mm. So it's just, you've got to, I think Dave queued it up real well, is you've got to understand when you accept that part, what that part involves.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah. Bob's point, though, to me, so with someone saying, I'm not going to touch someone because I'm married, it's like, then why did you try out?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I totally agree with that. However, there is, I know in my experience when I did 5th of July, David and I, my husband and I, were just starting to date. We had just, it was like within the first year and a half. So I had no problem going up there and doing, because to me, it's a role, it's a part. Mm-hmm. You know, that's mm-hmm. what we all, mm-hmm. what we do. We lose mm-hmm. ourselves and we become this character.
Yes.
But there was always a little bit of me in the back of my head that went, David's going to be watching me kiss this guy every night for 2 weeks. And so there was I had to get that little piece of that out of my brain as an actor, so I could move forward with that. But now, God bless, I have a husband who said, please do it, because then I don't have to. So that helps. But you know, there is. I mean, if you're really committed to being the best that you can be on stage, mm-hmm. part of that is being romantic and making people believe that you're with someone that you're really not with. Mm-hmm. And that can get a little...
Well, I remember my very first stage kiss. It was at a dinner theater at the country club.
Mm-hmm.
So very intimate space.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not tell my husband. I do not want to hear about it for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
No way. I'm not going to tell him. But their director, Nancy Williams, placed my family in the very first table right in front. And the kiss didn't come till the very end. And it was just a little peck. We were a long-term married couple that were shopping for separate beds. He didn't want separate beds. I wanted separate beds. It was mm-hmm. nothing. But so at the end of the play, I reach over, I give Norb and I kiss, and I hear out of my left ear my husband go, huh. He did tell me afterwards, he did go up to Norb and say, can you change that performance for the next two to from a kiss to a high five? And Norb said no.
Good for Norb. Well, and I will admit, when I was younger, well, actually even today, and probably because I haven't had the great romance in my life, but that's a whole separate podcast. I never quite understood that. It's like, if you're accepting your partner and you know they're an actor,
mm-hmm.
yeah,
then you got to understand that sometimes they're going to be intimate with someone on stage.
Yeah.
I don't care what play it is.
Yeah.
And you're just got to understand that that's that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, they aren't, that's not them up there. It's the character.
Right.
And I can see, you know, jealousy's a strange thing.
Human nature that sometimes just pops through.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I get that. But and I'll be honest, you know, most of us have probably seen it. Sometimes things get a little too advanced backstage.
It goes from, it comes from being suggestive to literal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, you know, we've seen relationships fall apart during plays and a new one start.
Yeah.
But again, I think if you're at that point, most likely your relationship wasn't on solid ground to start with.
You've got other problems.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And that's coming from me, so take it for what it's worth. But it's still, it's the kind of thing, I think you just have to accept it. But I know I've heard time and time again, oh, my husband's going to be so upset, or my wife's going to be upset.
Then don't take the part. But
I think that's where we got to say, make sure. So many people come to auditions without having read the play.
Oh, yeah, yes.
And that's mm-hmm.
So we got to make sure they know what's in the play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As mm-hmm. we were just talking.
Yeah.
And I suggest, then just my suggestion is take when you're auditioning, take some of those scenes as part of the audition so that these actors are aware as they're reading it. Oh, I'm doing that. Oh, I'd have to do this.
Yeah,
so that they know. I mean, you can.
Line.
The cuts you that
can,
you use.
Right. Yeah. You can tell them, okay, you're going to be showing your butt. Or, okay, you two are going to have a moment of a kiss. But if you do those scenes as part of the auditions, this is just my thinking, it's like, then it's right there in front of them.
That's a good idea.
To the reality is right there. Oh, this is what I'll be doing at this point.
Yeah.
So. That's just a suggestion.
I used a lot of laughing.
Well, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a kiss. I mean, it could be a dance. It could be a hug. It could be.
As simple as holding hands.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So those all need to be understood.
I guess for me, I mean, I've never had a lot of those moments. I've always been the comedic dude. Mm-hmm. But the few that I've had, I will have to say, because I don't do it a lot, it was slightly uncomfortable until I got into the headspace of the character. Once you get into the headspace, then it's like when I did, and I know I haven't brought this up in about four episodes.
Oh, no. Here we go.
When I did Bent.
Bent.
there is a scene.
How do you spell that?
thanks, Dave. There's a scene where the two of us who are moving rocks back and forth in this concentration camp do an extremely explicit sex scene. Now, we can't touch. We can't move because we don't want the guards to beat us or whatever. So we just stand there and we just talk this sex scene through. But it is a very graphic. Mm. And in the end, these two characters bring each other to orgasm just by talking. So you have to do that as well. That, I thought, when I read that play and I auditioned, I thought, I don't know if I can do that. Mm-hmm. But the play is so intense, and it's not done as a gratuitous, look at this, we're going to get you all excited. It's about two guys trying to reach out for some kind of intimacy in this horrific space. Again, once I got that concept of this is why, then it flowed.
Well, I will say in intimacy sometimes it's not even romantic.
No, it's not.
Well, and kind of to Brian's point where they're just talking, but I was in a play once where back in my youth, I was a lot freer sometimes with other actors, and I would do something that just seemed funny to me or not. And it was a scene where I was chiding another character, and I kind of gave him a pat, you know, a little thump on the forehead, and kind of like, eh, you know,
don't,
you idiot kind of thing. Well, eventually he says, stop doing that. and it makes me uncomfortable, and it's like, oh, it never occurred to me. So now, frankly, as an actor, before I try something new, especially if the director's not aware of it, I'll ask the other actor, are you okay with me touching you?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, and I think we as actors also have a responsibility to make sure that our partners on the stage are comfortable as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even before, and like I say, even if it's something as simple as just grabbing their hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, Kathleen is sitting and saying, you never asked me.
Yeah, there's been a lot of...
but I think there's also a point with some, when you've acted with someone a lot of times, you there is a familiarity that comes through that you don't really worry too much about those things. But especially if you're first time you're working with someone.
Yeah. And you know what's funny is, speaking of Kathleen and intimacy and staging it and how to stage it. When Kathleen and I did our moment in Bench in the Sun, that probably, I mean, I haven't had a lot. Mm-hmm. I've had one verbal sex scene. I had a couple kiss guys scenes in LGBTQ shows. Never in my 55 years had I ever kissed a woman.
Oh, that's funny.
On
stage. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I never had. Never had the opportunity. So when we did Bench in the Sun and suddenly I'm got to kiss Kathleen, it threw me off because it's like, I don't know. I've never done that before. Now it was exciting to me as well because it's like, oh, here's a challenge. Here's something new.
Yeah.
But I was truly uncomfortable. I think Kathleen knew I was uncomfortable at the beginning of that.
Yeah, at the beginning.
At the beginning of that. It was like, so I think her and I really worked to position it just a certain way so that we could get the kiss in without being uncomfortable and still giving the
passion that we wanted it to have.
Yeah. But I think that was a gentle, that wasn't really a passion, it was a gentle, it was a gentle moment.
It
brings back a memory of my first stage kiss that I recall. It was early on in my acting career. I was in my 20s still, so was the actress against me. The difference was we were supposed to play a married couple on stage, but she was married in real life. I wasn't, of course. And then it was Barefoot in the Park, and our first kiss was I walked in the door, and she's supposed to run across the room, and leap into my arms, and kiss me.
Okay, yeah.
And that was the most awkward kiss, not just because, you know, I'm kissing a married woman and all that, which, you know, it crossed my mind briefly, but I wasn't too worried about it. We just went in for it. We kept bumping teeth.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Because she came at me with such force.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, pow! It's like, pow!
But that can happen.
So maybe you also need stunt coordinators. anyway, that's just my first story.
Well, even just, you know, being in sync on which way you're going to tilt your heads.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can see the need for, maybe the need for someone, especially if the two people are awkward, for a third person to come in and say, okay, we're really going to plot this moment out so that everybody's comfortable and the scene flows naturally.
Yeah. Well, in Becky's A New Car, there was a very passionate kiss, and you never gave us any stage direction.
I never did. Because when you're working with two professionals, you don't feel like you need to.
Anything, Dave.
No. Well, and I guess
I was closing my
eyes. I may have gone a little too far with my tongue.
Oh.
But that's that's always a shock.
And now I'm nauseous.
No, and that's the thing. It's also the realization of the stage kiss is just a stage kiss.
Yeah.
What the audience sees.
Yeah.
You know, you shouldn't be going in there saying, well, I hope she thinks I'm a good kisser. Mm. No. It's really just get those lips together.
And get it. You know.
And it's your body language is telling most of the story. Yeah. Not you know, don't actually says make out on stage. There's ways to do it without actually making out on stage.
And I never really, with Kathleen, the one thing I didn't feel nervous about was her husband. Because that's the nice thing about being a gay man. When you're kissing a woman, the husband's going to go, oh, well, that one you can kiss all you want.
When Brian went backstage and said, I kissed a girl and I liked it, I was like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Back to you, Dave.
Okay. Well
no, wait, there, Carol.
I don't know if that went where you wanted.
How many kisses have you had?
I was trying to think. I don't think I've had any.
Oh, no?
No.
Oh, my God.
I think in Gilligan's Island, there may have been a cheek kiss, but I don't remember it. But no, I've never had one.
Oh.
I was listing everybody. I'm like, oh, my gosh, I'm a hussy.
Yeah. No.
I think I've had several.
So let's say there either is no intimacy coordinator or you can't afford one or you didn't know such a thing exists or whatever. What are some workarounds?
Well, I think the first one, you know, make sure everyone understands what's involved.
I think another one might be working on those scenes with just those two people without any anyone else around to allow a lot of talk, communication. How did that feel?
And don't make the mistake of waiting.
Yeah, till the end.
I think that's a good
because
point.
I think I've been in some plays where it's like, okay, well, we'll kiss when it's time. We'll kiss when it's time. It's like, okay, it's dress rehearsal.
Yeah.
You know, I think if you're directing it, force that kiss, and that's what I've done is try to get that.
Which is interesting because in Becky's New Car, I'm pretty sure
I think we waited.
You were the one going. We'll wait.
You're sick. I mean, you were.
You did have a cold and
And again,
he said
it was with an actress I'd worked with before. I wasn't too concerned.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if she was.
Always.
No, she's shaking her head. Nah.
Nah.
No, do you see the list of guys she's kissed?
I know. I'm like, oh, my gosh.
I'm on there two or three times, actually, I think. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you are on there quite a bit, Dave.
That's a 1040 adult.
On stage, Keith. Only on stage.
Yeah, on stage. Don't worry, he'll never hear this.
And, yeah.
But one of the other things I think also, I don't mean it, but is let the actors work it out themselves. Mm. You stay there. You got to be there to keep things moving and flowing and whatever. But sometimes let the actors first try and work it out themselves, and you know, let you as the director sit back and take it in as an audience. Would the audience believe this? Yeah. And if you know that the audience will believe this, and you can let the actors work it out themselves, and it works. Well, that might be part of, you know, the problem might be resolved well,
and
there.
Certainly find ways for the actors to interact with each other as people, maybe.
Yes.
Off
yes.
stage. Mm-hmm. So that they have that level of comfort with each other.
Yeah.
Just to do that early enough in the process, so it can be a very natural thing if they've done it 500 times in the green room during audition and rehearsal.
Well, there's that.
I would say, I don't know. I haven't seen that in the green room for quite a while, but probably not.
Yeah.
Not our green room.
We don't have one.
We are the green room.
Well, we are the green room. You're
wherever
right.
we go, we are the green
room. I'm sorry.
Room.
What were you going to say, though, Carol? Because
well, I was going to say, is there a way to disguise so the audience thinks something's going on that isn't?
Yes.
Oh, there is.
And a lot of the older shows, frankly, the romance is so implied that there is no actual physical touch.
Yep.
But it's just applied
but
at
the
a different
is there that,
yeah, a deeper level.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So yeah, there is.
Yeah.
There
so was, yeah. But you know, interesting discussion. But unfortunately, we're starting to run a little on time, and we want to hear about the love story that Carol just saw.
Yeah, Carol.
I say just saw a few weeks ago, and see if her impressions line up with those of Brian and David's.
Mm-hmm. Did you see this at the Stranahan?
I did. Okay. I went to the Stranahan, and I saw Shocked.
And did you see it? You saw it in Broadway.
I saw it in Broadway.
I saw it in Detroit.
Okay.
You saw it in Stranahan.
Cool. So cool. We've seen three different versions.
Three different venues.
Yes.
Venues.
Well, the first thing I have to tell you was I was so impressed by the talent in this troupe. Mm-hmm. I mean, their voices were amazing. Mm-hmm. It was an absolute joy to listen to them sing. Mm-hmm. I was surprised that there wasn't more dancing. Mm-hmm. I kept waiting. You had talked about the barrel dance. I'm like, okay, where's a barrel dance? All I did was jump up and down off a barrel a couple of times, and I thought,
not mine. They were running with the barrels, rolling.
No.
Oh, mine was this huge.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Well, that's what happens
Broadway,
when you go
baby.
To the Stranahan versus
Broadway.
Well, I was going to say, yeah. I thought in Detroit it was a fairly intricate dance.
It was.
No, it was just.
I don't remember barrels rolling though.
Yeah.
No, there were no rolling. There were barrels, and the main thing I was impressed by the way they were able to just jump up onto the top of the barrel. And then I realized the barrels weren't really full-size barrels.
Mm. Mm.
But still, more than I could do. Mm-hmm. But that was a bit of a letdown for me because I was waiting for that.
Huh.
But the thing that I kept thinking about was, this is Music Man.
Mm-hmm.
It's just basically Music Man. And there was one song in there, and I can't remember which one it is, that was... It's like it could have been lifted directly out of Music Man, in the one where it comes into town and I don't know which song that is in Shucked, but
the Grifter.
SAS should have brought my program in. I think it was the same troupe. That
yeah.
Was in Detroit.
Oh yeah, and so I enjoyed it.
Lulu certainly was.
Yeah, would I go see it again? Probably not. Unless it was on Broadway or something like that.
So you didn't walk away feeling good, feeling like, I'm happy. This was a good show.
Well, yeah, I did. But it wasn't one that I don't think is going to stay with me forever in terms of, remember when we went and, you know.
Oh, David and I talk about this.
I didn't get that,
really? David loved
that sense from it. Yeah. I did enjoy it very much. My friend who I went with, I enjoyed it very much. Although... And I have to tell you this story, and I've told Dave already. So before the show, and this is a friend of mine who's she's not a theater person in that she's not involved in theater. She doesn't go to Broadway, you know, that kind of a thing. But she does go to a lot of – she's been to every one of our shows at the community theater and so on. And we go to shows together. But anyway – so we're sitting there, and I don't know how it came up, but we were talking. I was talking about things I'd seen on Broadway, and I said I actually saw Patti LuPone in Gypsy, and she goes, "Who?" I said Patti LuPone. She goes, "Who's that?" And I was like,
takes it away.
I to the point where I got very dramatic and I said, "We can't be friends anymore. You don't know who Patti LuPone is and you don't know Gypsy." And she said, "No, what's Gypsy?" And so I'm explaining it to her and she goes, Gypsy Rose Lee. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm like, "Yes, it's the story of Gypsy Rose Lee. It was a movie, Natalie Wood, whatever." Oh, I think I saw that. But anyway, I was just like, how does anybody not know who Patti LuPone is? And I guess that shows how small my world is.
Well, but yeah, you're right. It's like if somebody, and I don't want to do this, but I'm going to do this. If, you know, for a lot of people, if Ron said, "Oh yeah, the great Mickey Mantle," there are probably a lot of people out there that went, "I have no idea who Mickey Mantle is."
And that's scary.
I guess, I would think so too.
Well, I guess sitting in
from Mickey Mouse,
the audience waiting for a production to begin.
Right.
I figured, she knows Patti LuPone. She didn't, but.
Yeah, that's what's, especially since Patti LuPone was such a well-known figure in community theater.
Yeah, for quite a few minutes.
For at least
a
month,
wasn't it? For at least 5 minutes, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it's still, it's like, Patti, I don't think any theater you were in was community
theater. But so.
By our definition.
I enjoyed the show very much. It was fun. The one-liners.
Oh, the one-liners.
I was laughing so hard.
Good. At least you enjoyed
I enjoyed the comedy of it. Yeah, the comedy elements of it.
You were watching the Carol Burnett show at times.
I see
Hee-haw.
That. Yeah.
Closer to Hee-haw.
Yeah, closer to Hee-haw.
And part of it, too, I kept waiting for like an alien to land or something, because they kept talking about how isolated they were and they're surrounded by corn and whatever. So I thought, maybe they'll find out it's, they're living in 1950 and it's really 2025. That didn't happen. Spoiler. And no aliens landed. Spoiler.
Wasn't Gilligan's Island, no.
And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the witty remarks more than anything. I had some problems with some of the character arcs, but
it was fast and loose with some of that.
Yeah.
Were you surprised at the little twist at the end?
I was not really that surprised.
No.
Okay.
I guess I was in the sense of who the twist affected.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But I figured somehow this was all coming together.
Going to wrap up in a nice little bow. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is weird, because these are the musicals that I normally don't like, and I fell in love with this one.
Yeah.
I gave it away early in this episode, but what Carol just said is essentially the Music Man.
It is.
Yeah.
It is, but I think it was a lot funnier.
Definitely.
And they come right out and tell you it's going to be a corny show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is corn. You know, there are no surprises in that way. No. If we did catch on with the twist, it would probably be more surprising.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did have a problem with part of that twist, frankly. I don't want to give it away for people in the audience, so we'll talk later. But
okay.
there's one little thing that seemed a little odd to me about that twist.
All right, we'll talk about that off.
Yeah, there were a bunch of things that were odd to me about the ending, but completely believable in the context of the show.
Sure.
Okay.
In their reality, it all works.
Yeah. And saw it coming a mile away, just because everything always gets wrapped up in a bow. I mean, it's not Romeo and Juliet. It's, there's going to be a happy ending. But my favorite thing about it, and if I did go see it again, that's why I would, is for the one-liners.
Yeah.
They were delightful.
And that's what made you think of Hee-Haw was the boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
Yeah, they came out.
As always, I have difficulties with the acoustics at Stranahan.
Yeah.
I find that really high voices are very hard for me to hear there. I don't know if it's me or it's the acoustics, but I had a hard time.
Headphones available.
No.
While they were advertising that, one of the great advantages.
Yeah, no, I didn't get into that. And it wasn't the volume necessarily. It was
clarity.
The clarity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I've made that note too. In the Fisher, I had no trouble hearing anything.
Oh.
But at Stranahan, I sometimes have to struggle to hear something.
Yeah.
We had to struggle to hear Wicked.
The most important question, though, did you go to the concession stands?
I did not.
Oh, shoot. So you don't know if they sold corn dogs?
I do not.
Okay.
No.
I'm just curious, is that something they do every...
I want a $15 corn dog, I'll go to Tiger Stadium.
I think they were only $10, so they were quite the bargain.
Yeah.
It was cheaper than than my Diet Coke was, which came in a special cup that's refillable. And if I go to a show again in the Fisher, I got to remember to take it with me.
Yeah.
But as Dave said at the beginning, do you think this would be a good one for community theater to do?
100%.
Yeah.
I mean, 100%. Same here.
I think absolutely. Like I say, if we're available tomorrow, I think everyone should be out there getting it.
Yeah. Oh. Because it's one set. Mm-hmm. There's no, at least the one I saw, there's no complicated choreography.
Mm-mm. Is that one, but I saw obviously a more complicated version of it.
Right.
Of course, they're in residence essentially at Broadway, so maybe they can do better. I don't know.
Yeah.
Do more.
And the nice thing about it too is that the songs are not well known enough to where if your people were not as talented as a professional program, no one would say anything.
Yeah.
Like, I would think if anybody ever does Wicked, it would be...
They got a problem.
You got a problem.
Well, yeah. And I was thinking not well known enough, too, either, so you're not having to sit there and listen to someone else singing the score to Hamilton while you're trying to listen to
then
the
Then there's
stage.
That. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. God. Totally agree.
Because they all knew that. Well, thank you, Carol. That's great. Seems to me I had one more comment, but we're running out of time anyway. So... It does look like we're out of time for this episode, and I would like to thank each and every one of you out there for listening. We appreciate the support you give us and that you give to your theater. Hey, if you got a minute, go to Apple Podcast, give us a like, a share, rate us. I think you can do it on Spotify now, but that will help spread the word that we're here. So spread the joy. Let's see the Green Room expand across our wonderful globe. We appreciate feedback and conversation, of course, topics especially. So try to find our Facebook page. Just look for Monroe Community Players Podcast, Green Room Groupies, The Art and Business of Community Theater, all the usual stuff. Emails may be sent to the MCPpodcast@monroecommunityplayers.org. And keep up with the latest shows and activities of MCP, go to monroecommunityplayers.org. We release 2 episodes a month. Please take a moment to subscribe, like, etc., which I already said. And The Art and Business of Community Theater is presented with the assistance of the Monroe Community Players, recorded at the Monroe County Library's Ellis Branch Podcast Studio, overlooking the historic River Raisin in Monroe, Michigan, and distributed with the assistance of Impact Monroe Public Access. It also goes without saying that all opinions expressed during this podcast, stupid or otherwise, are those of the individual expressing them and no one else. Once more, for the love of theater, we are the Groupies, and we will see you
in the Green Room.
A little slice of heaven, because it hasn't.